thanks for joining us for another episode of Divorce Confidential. I'm Michelle Delino, divorce and family law attorney with Delino Family Law Group. We have offices in Seattle and Bellevue, and we help clients all around Washington State. And I am here with Amy Alpeza with Windermere Real Estate. Amy's a certified real estate divorce specialist, and she is your go-to for all things real estate. Amy, how are you?
I am so good, Michelle. Thank you. That was a really kind intro today.
Yeah, absolutely. I was feeling it today. So Amy just got back from vacation, so we're all jealous of that. But we're back with another episode today. We're going to just kick it off. Really, the episode today is about child support. Let's just get that out there. We're going to talk about some nuts and bolts of child support, some frequently asked questions and scenarios that come up. If you have kids, whether you're married or not, child support order is something you need to know about. So we'll talk about that. But before we do, I wanted to check in, Amy, and get like a market update. Our market here in the Northwest, it seems to still be really hot. Every markets everywhere, I think, are picking back up. Can you tell us what's going on? I know interest rates are still affecting things. Give us just like a high level overview of what's happening.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, market is definitely strong and steady. I read an article this morning that said, you know, that Seattle housing prices were the second largest in the country to decline year over year. And we had the second largest decrease in closings year over year. Mm-hmm. And it's funny because when you read that article, you know, title, you think, gosh, like prices are coming down, which they have, but they're coming back up. And, but really, you know, the logistics of it are we have 40% fewer listings coming on because we have 40% fewer sellers who are moving, right? And so, yes, we have 40% fewer closings for the month of April, but it's relative to how many listings are coming on. So it doesn't mean that we have a decrease in sales. It just means that the decrease in sales volume is completely relative to the amount of homes that are coming on the market for sale. Does that make sense?
That makes total sense.
Yeah. And the biggest reason is because interest rates are so low. People do not want to give up their 3%, you know, or sub 3% interest rate. You know, we've talked about this.
Like, yes, it's a real thing. You basically can afford less house. So you have to think about that, right? I mean, it's coming up in divorce all the time too lately. We're seeing people where it's like, oh man, the parties probably need to sell the home because there's only so many assets and they can't afford to cash out the other person. But now we're looking at different scenarios to try to hang on to homes longer or to work out some kind of an arrangement because people are saying, I don't want to have to buy something else at 7%.
Right. Yeah. Or I can't, there's no way I'll become a homeowner again, especially for my couples that are in their 50s plus. Mm-hmm. They're like, I don't think I'm going to be able to afford to buy a house if I have to sell my current house because mm-hmm. we can't divide the assets and then go and buy, you know, two new properties.
Yeah. So yeah.
I've got a couple right now who they've worked out a situation where they're both going to stay on the mortgage for 3 years mm-hmm. or if interest rates drop below 5%, whichever comes sooner. Mm-hmm. And so because of that, it's like, okay, it gives me time to figure out what I'm going to do. And it also gives them time to figure out, you know, their maintenance and their settlement. And so, mm-hmm. you know, you, like you said, you're trying to come up with creative ways of helping clients afford to stay in the home.
Things we wouldn't have had to think about before, because when interest rates were low, it was like, it was no big deal, you know, and it's really something to think about. And I think, I'm wondering what you think. Interest rates are, they're not going to be at those rates anytime soon.
No, not in the threes. No.
And no.
Honestly, I don't know if we'll see those again in our
lifetime. Maybe. That's kind of what I was wondering.
Yeah. I would say that most mortgage professionals that I talk to do expect that rates will start to come down the second half of the year. I don't think they're going to come down below 5%.
Mm-hmm. 5% though is, and that's still a solid rate. And I think a lot of people don't get that.
It's totally affordable. I mean, it's so much more affordable than where we were 15 years ago or 20 years ago, or when we were kids, right? And our parents were buying their houses at 15 to 20% interest rates. So, but one thing too is, you know, housing prices did come down last year. And so they're starting to rebound. You know, we were initially anticipating like a 2 to 3% year over year appreciation. Now I'm seeing some analysts say 5 to 6% appreciation year over year. So I don't know. I think it really just depends on your situation, figuring out what's best for you. And definitely, people are worried about affordability. But if you're looking at something that you purchased, you know, last year, let's say you paid $1 million for it last year, and this year it's worth $800,000, but your interest rate is double. Right. Yes, it's definitely still more expensive, but there are ways to buy down rates in order to make it more affordable, especially in the, 1 to 3 year time period.
Yeah.
And then hoping to get those rates down even further. So
I've seen that lately with the rate buy down, which I wasn't even a thing before either. So there's ways you can make it work if you need to make it work, basically.
Definitely. But yeah, sure. We're in a strong housing market. Every single buyer that I have made an offer on this year has been a multiple offer scenario. Wow.
That's good to hear.
It is good. It's not crazy. I had one buyer who we put in an offer. There was 18 other offers.
Whoa.
I know. It was in Redmond. So it was a good, Education Hill, good area.
Yeah.
But I think, let me see, it was listed at 1-1 and I think it went to 1-3-5. So that was probably the largest spread I've seen this year. Usually they're more 50 to 100,000, and even a lot of multiple offers are coming in right at list. So don't be dismayed thinking that everything out there is, crazy. It's not. So
yeah, no, that's totally true. All right, let's switch gears, talk about child support. So I guess I'll just kick it off about this, then we'll throw some questions back and forth, I guess, a little bit. Child support is kind of a hot button issue because somebody's paying it to the other person, and usually the person paying it doesn't think it's fair, doesn't want to have to pay it. So I just wanted to talk about when it's necessary, why people need to know about it. If you have kids and you're getting divorced or separated, you need to know about it. If you're getting divorced, court will not let you finalize a divorce if you have children without a parenting plan and child support in place. Even if you don't want child support, you still have to have an order saying no support. It still has to address with who's going to pay the kids' insurance, who's going to pay for expenses. Even if you're planning on splitting those, you still need a child support order. So you've got to know about it. If you are an unmarried couple, and nobody goes to court, either party can go to the Division of Child Support and ask for child support at any time. So you need to know that and how it works and why you may or may not want to do that. So anyway, child support is the support from one household to another to help support the kids. That's kind of the biggest thing. Yeah, Amy, what are some questions that you see come up? Because I know you talk to clients a lot and see different scenarios. I want to just deal with some of the common questions. I can also talk about how it works too.
So I think a couple things. Let's start with, in Washington state, is child support ordered by your income level, or is child support based on, need and ability to pay, or is it based on, however much the parties think is fair? Tell me how Washington state deals with.
Yeah. What's it based on? Exactly. Yeah. I will tell you this. I don't want to minimize, but we always tell clients, I was just helping a client prepare for a really complicated mediation that we have on Friday, dealing with a bunch of stuff. And they have kids. Child support was the last thing I mentioned. And it's such a hot button issue. She's like, what about the child support? What about the child support? And I told her the same thing I tell other clients, which is child support's the easy part of your case. It's easy. And I'll tell you why. It's because your child support is not about anything other than two things. Who has the most nights in the month? That's going to determine what parent gets the support. And the second part of it is it's based on a statutory formula, which means we have a calculator. We take both parents' incomes, we plug it in the calculator, we do all of the deductions for taxes. There's retirement contribution within a certain reason, other kinds of dues or things you might have coming out of your check. Some count, some don't. And we come up with a number. And that number is based on the income of the parties, the age of your children, and where you're living. And basically, you're getting a number that comes out that's the result of your incomes. Child support also, though, caps out. And when I mean caps out, there's a whole schedule of how much you make and how much the child support is. And when parties have a combined income of $12,000 or more, let's say one party makes $50,000 and one party makes you know, $5,000. Well, you have $55,000 combined income. The child support amount isn't going to be any more than if one party made $10,000 and one party made two. It's going to cap out at $12,000 combined income. Your support is not proportional to your income in that respect. And in our area in King County, we have a lot of people that have more than $12,000 combined income. That's not unheard of. But those numbers still matter because there's two sets of numbers you get from a child support scenario. You get the actual transfer payment, the amount one parent pays to the other, and that's the payments that cap out at $12,000. And then you get another number, which is a proportional share. It's a percentage. So if you have one person making $50,000 and one person, you know, making $5,000, if you think about it like this, that's a total of $55,000, right? And so if you divide that and you look at what 5,000 is, that's 11% of the amount. It's not that much. So right. Then you have a ratio of basically what would it be 11% to 89%. So everything not covered by child support, which is co-pays, out-of-pocket medical, like braces, counseling, summer camps, extracurriculars, the parent making the 50,000, they pay 89% of that. The party making 5,000 pays 11%. So the total numbers are still important, even if they don't influence the total payment. So that's a lot more information than you probably wanted, but basically the nuts and bolts are, we have a statutory formula. It's based on the income of the parties. And, you know, how much time you have with the kids, like who has more or less. Another thing that comes up, though, someone's like, what if someone's not working? Well, the court expects you to be working unless you're on disability. And if not, the court will do what we call impute income to you. And we have a table that says, oh, you're 45 and you're a man. This is the money that you should be making at a minimum. So we'll impute that to you for purposes of child support. So you can't just be like, I can't afford it. If you lose a job or you're in a situation where, you know, you really can't get a job, then maybe you're paying a minimum of, you know, $50 a month a kid, but that's very rare. Mm-hmm. Bottom line is if you're able-bodied and able to work, jobs are such right now that you should get one or you're going to get income imputed.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
And so what about if it's reversed, let's say, which this probably doesn't happen very common, but let's for instance, say the father, he's got 70% of the nights, but mm-hmm. also makes the majority of the income.
Mm-hmm. Great question. Yeah, great question. So in that situation, let's say dad has majority of the nights, but he makes most of the income. Mom's going to pay support to him still. It doesn't matter, but it's going to be a lot less than dad would be paying mom, right? Like if because what happens is you have a total number that's a result of how much everybody makes. And then that total number gets divided by like the percentage allocation. So let's say you have that family that has 55,000 a month. One person's 50, one is five. You have the one that's five, their 11% of the child support number would be paid to the other parent if the other parent had the most nights. So that's kind of how it happens. There's also really common scenarios for what I call deviation from that standard calculation. If parents are on a 50-50, then you make the same amount of money, you're going to deviate to zero. You have a zero transfer payment because you both have the same amount of time and you have the same amount of resources. But if you're on a 50-50, one parent makes 50,000 and one parent makes 5,000, the parent who makes 5,000 is still going to get child support from the other household. The parent who makes 50,000 might get a break on it. Like they'll get what's called a deviation. And the reason for that might be because they have time with the child, but it's a hardship to the parent who makes 5,000 to give a deviation. So they might not get it. If there's that kind of an income disparity, even on a 50-50, there's still going to be child support. If both parties just made 10,000 bucks a month and they had a 50-50, it's probably not going to be any child support.
Got it. So, and yeah. But remind our listeners, though, why child support is separate from maintenance and how are those two things considered when you're putting them together? Like, is your settlement?
Yeah, really, really good question. And I think I see what you're asking. So here's one thing to know. This is what I was telling my client the other day, too. We don't calculate child support ahead of like mediation, unless we really want to, because you're going to have to do it again, because maintenance is counted, even though maintenance isn't taxed, it's still counted on a child support worksheet. So the person receiving the maintenance, that is counted as like their monthly income, and the person who's paying it, that's reducing their monthly income. So since we're usually going to negotiate that maintenance number at mediation, we don't necessarily know how much income is going to be in whose column, because the maintenance is going to be part of that. I'll tell you the difference between spousal maintenance and child support. And for anybody listening, spousal maintenance is the Washington term for alimony. So it means that it's a payment of support from one spouse to the other post-divorce. It can also be temporary, but it's usually a payment of support from one spouse to the other post-divorce to basically help them with basic necessities or whatever they want to spend it on. And child support is specifically to address the basic needs of a child, which are food, shelter, clothing, day-to-day necessities like that. Not extras, but food, shelter, and clothing. Some people are like, this is something that comes up a lot. I pay $1,500 a month in child support. I want to see where it's going. Well, you don't get to. The parent who's receiving the child support can use it towards their mortgage. They can use it towards gas. They can use it towards anything that they want, because they have a certain amount of money that they are getting from the other household to pay for these basic necessities. They don't owe you an accounting. A lot of people want that. They can spend it on whatever they want. And if they waste it, then, well, they're responsible for taking care of the child most of the time. So they have to deal with it. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a really good point, because I have heard that, and I remember that even, you know, in my own situation, where it's like, well, I want to make sure that you're spending it on the things that I think you should be spending it on. And it's like, well, these are all things that are needed to take care of, you know, the children. So
yeah.
So and then let's talk about extracurricular activities. How do people determine, or how do parents determine what is, you know, do they have to agree upon all extracurriculars? Do they have to agree upon, like, if the kids need braces? I mean,
I'm really glad you asked that. The braces thing too, man, that comes up all the time. Extracurriculars, here's my little overview on that. In your parenting plan, you have decision making. And unless there's a reason to limit decision making, people probably have joint decision making. Most of the time they do in Washington. And so that means if you have, there's a couple of different ways extracurriculars are handled. The most common way is, if we're going to have an extracurricular, we have to agree on it, because it's going to cut across both of our times. Some people will say if you have extracurriculars and it's only on one parent's time, that both parties don't have to agree. But here's the other thing about extracurriculars. It typically financially obligates both parties. So it's normal in most scenarios that parties have to agree on extracurriculars, especially if it's going to financially obligate you. So a common thing is one parent tells the other parent, hey, kid wants to play violin. This is how much it's going to cost. Do you agree? Other parent says yes, or other parent says no. And if they say no and it's financial, then the parent, and that's the only reason they're objecting, then the parent has, other parent has the option to pay for it, or they use their dispute resolution provision to basically argue about it and get a decision. And then how do you pay for the extracurriculars is that percentage I was talking about. Mm-hmm. So child, you know, son wants to play violin, and they've got to buy the equipment, they've got to pay for the lessons, they got to pay for the violin itself and the case and all that. So then you go to that proportional share on your child support worksheets, and maybe one person's paying 30% and one person's paying 70%, whatever the income split is. Mm-hmm. So both people essentially need to agree on it. Same for braces. Like, okay, the kid needs braces. We've got to agree on it. And usually in my experience, if there ends up being a fight about that, if you have somebody saying it's necessary or recommended, that's mm-hmm. going to happen and you're going to pay for it. Yeah. Good questions. Really good questions.
Well, yeah. And those are, you know, a lot of the things that I hear on my end. I mean, is there other questions that you think that our listeners should know about that maybe your clients have brought up to you, or that you've dealt with in the past that we haven't covered?
Yeah, I think one, I'll tell you another one. This is upward deviations. I'll tell you what that means. This comes up a lot, and it's something I think people should just know. You have that situation where one party makes $50,000, the other party makes $5,000. We'll just keep going back to that big disproportionate income split. Someone will be like, well, he makes so much money, or she makes so much money, I should get more than what the calculation is. Mm-hmm. And there's only upward deviations are a lot harder to get than downward deviations. It's not just going to be given to you because somebody makes a lot of money, because that's not what the law says. An upward deviation would be like, I might be able to get more money from the other parent if they can afford it. And if there's a need, like my child has a ton of special needs and I have to like retrofit my house to like get them in and out. And like, I have all these different special needs that we really need to provide extra care and extra things for. That would be one thing. Okay. you know, but just getting more money just because isn't really ever going to happen. Another common question, this comes up literally all the time, I'm glad I thought of it, is people are like, I'm remarried or I'm living with someone, does their income count? And the answer to that is it depends. Mm-hmm. No step parent's income is going to be, or you know, somebody you're living with is going to be included in that worksheet. Like it's not going to factor in and they're not going to be obligated to pay support. But if you're asking for a deviation to say, I have the kid half the time, I should have to pay less. Or the other person is saying like, it's a hardship to me not to get the full support amount. They should be denied a deviation. You have to disclose, if you have someone living with you, how much money they make. And the reason isn't because it factors into the payment, but because it can be a reason to say your household has sufficient resources. You don't need that extra money. Or to say your household, you live with someone, but they only make $1,500 a month. Yeah, you probably do need the extra money that you're asking for, you know, so that's how that factors in. I have another client who is going to end up having her kids 24/7. Like the other parents really never going to have any visitation. Mm-hmm. That would be a basis where, because there's not even a split on time at all, she would be in a position to say, and the other party can afford it, I could get an upward deviation because my household's going to need significant resources. The other parent has no time at all. So that would be a reason maybe why. But if she married somebody else, her new spouse's income, if it was a lot, it might be enough to say, oh, your household has enough money, he doesn't need to pay anymore. So that's kind of how it can be, like a check and balance, a new spouse's income.
Would that have to be, what do they call it when you want to revisit your health support order, like every 2 years?
Oh yeah, we should talk about this briefly too before we let folks go. There's two ways to change your child support. One is a modification and one is an adjustment. An adjustment, anybody can bring every 2 calendar years from the last order. And that is just, only thing that does is you update the party's income and you update that support amount based on the calculation and you update that proportional share just based on income. You make no other changes to the order. When you do that, you need to disclose the other party's income. Like if you weren't living with someone before and you are now, and you had a deviation before, and now you're living with someone that makes $30,000 a month, maybe you don't need that deviation anymore. So you might not want to adjust. Modification, it can be done at any time, but it requires a substantial change in circumstances that didn't exist and you couldn't have contemplated when the last order entered. Usually it's someone loses a job and can't find another one, so they need to modify their support. Sometimes it's like they want to revisit or argue about something else in the order with respect to who's paying what proportional share or something, because, you know, maybe there's something that came up. But that can also be a situation where it's like, I lost my job, I can't afford to pay support. Well, yeah, but you're living with someone who's making $80,000 a month that works at Google. So you probably can't afford, your household can't afford to pay, you know, something. So yeah, you can do an adjustment at any time with a change in circumstances that's substantial, or I'm sorry, a modification at any time with a change in circumstances, or an adjustment every 2 calendar years just to update based on income. When kids are 12, the calculations in the statute kind of reflect that kids eat more and they do more stuff. So and they buy more clothes. So yeah. Child support, you kind of get a little bit of a bump. So sometimes people just wait and then modify it when a kid is 12 to get a little more, if that makes sense. So
yeah. Totally. I mean, thinking about my teenagers, I've got three
teenagers at home and they eat a lot, like, right? I hear this.
Holy cow. It's like as much as like a mortgage payment, you know? I mean,
right?
It's insane. Yeah. And they also have friends that are also the same age and they eat just as much.
So. They come over and they eat the food and like, yeah, it's like a whole thing. Exactly.
Yeah.
Well,
so yeah. I think that those are all, I mean, those are like high level, but they're also really important, you know, topics and details about child support. And we didn't get into parenting plans as much. I think that's a totally different, you know, podcast that we'll put on for you guys, but yeah. I think this should hopefully give you a lot of good information about child support order in Washington state. Remember, this is Washington state child support.
Exactly. This is specific to Washington. So if you're out there listening somewhere else, get an overview because your state might deal with it differently. But at the end of the day, you pretty much need a support order everywhere. So go get one, or at least, and there's one last thing I'll say before we go is if you're unmarried, you still can get a support order, like I said earlier. And it's really worth looking at because I've had so many people over the years where they'll come to us and they'll say, oh my gosh, the other party is asking for support for the last 5 years. I've been giving her money every month. I've been paying for all this every month, but we didn't have an order in place. Well, as far as the court's concerned, you weren't paying paying child support. So you could end up paying even more. So sometimes even if you're the one paying, it makes sense for you to get an order in place to make sure that's accounted for and it's documented. If you're helping out anyway, like you don't want to be, you know, double tagged or having to explain that later. So that's just a thought. You need it. You need to know about it. Thanks for being here today, Amy. This was fun. And I hope everybody out there got some good information. We'll see you next time.